United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe. Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm your host, Katie Giebenhain. My guest is poet Julie Swarstad Johnson, an artist in residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park. Julie has a bachelor's degree in anthropology and creative writing from the University of Arizona, and she has an MFA in English creative writing from Penn State University. Julie, welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Hey, Katie, thanks so much for having me.
So you've been to Gettysburg for about a week now.
I have, yes.
And how has your... How's it going? What are your first impressions?
Yeah, it's been good so far. I mean, it's had, I feel like I kind of just arrived, even though it's been a week. It's kind of taken a week to settle in. I have been to Gettysburg before now, so it's nice to come back, but I've only ever been here for a day or so. I'm kind of always in the summer. So for me, it's been interesting to be here. Kind of at the end of winter, although the weather's been all over the place.
That's true.
yeah, snow to like 70s. But yeah, just to be here at a different time of year. So the past week has just been kind of adjusting and getting used to being alone and just kind of finding a rhythm of working and reacquainting myself with the landscape.
Very good. And could you describe, you have a really interesting specific project that you're working on here as part of your residency. Could you describe that?
Sure, yeah. The project I'm working on, I'm writing specifically about the Scherfe family. They were the owners of the Peach Orchard, which for listeners that are familiar with the Battle of Gettysburg, that was a site of a kind of major engagement on the second day. Heavy fighting took place in the Peach Orchard. Which was owned by the Scherfes. The Scherfes were members of the German Baptist Brethren Church, more commonly known as Dunkers or Brethren. And that's a denomination similar to Mennonites, where pacifism is kind of a core tenet of who they are. So I'm writing about the experience of the Scherfe family before and after the battle, and then more broadly, just kind of thinking about what was the experience of groups like Brethren, Mennonites, and Quakers during the Civil War. They're all groups that pacifism was a key thing, so known as the historic peace churches, but also groups for whom abolition was often a fairly important issue. So in the Civil War, you find this interesting confluence of things that they both believe in or care about and then can't quite take part in directly or choose not to take part in directly.
And it's interesting that you're also looking at them before the battle. There's often, well, obviously there's a tremendous influence on those days here, right, the battle itself. And this is going to be a book of poems, correct?
Yeah.
That you're working toward?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine maybe it'll be a book-length project. It could also just be a smaller section of a book. But I think I'm probably at a place that it could easily be a book-length project.
Well, it's interesting that you're also looking into the Scherfe family before the battle as well, the sort of before, during, and after, because that's you're taking a particularly deep look at this,
right?
And that's going to give a different sort of perspective.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, even though being in Gettysburg and especially being at the park, those 3 days of the battle are so pivotal, and they are such. So much happened and so much changed for people because of what happened there in those 3 days. But it's also just 3 days in a very long life of a place and the long life of a community.
And have you had a tour of the museum at the Gettysburg visitor center already?
I haven't gotten to go behind the scenes yet, although I'm looking forward to that next week. But I have been to see the film and the cyclorama and the museum. I've also spent some time yesterday morning in the Park Museum, or the Park Library and Visitor Center.
Mm-hmm.
the Park, I'm still not getting that right. It's the Park Library and Research Center. There we go. And which is wonderful. It's this beautiful, beautiful room in the Park Visitor Center that you can go to by appointment and have access to a very large collection of archival materials. So I spent yesterday morning there reading through materials related to the Scherfey family. And I've also gone to the Adams County Historical Society and been working through some documents there as well.
Great. That's a really good resource too. I'm glad you found your way there.
Yeah, both places. Yeah, I've had great help from the librarian and volunteers in both places.
You have an approach of something called a persona poem. That's one way to approach a poem in the sort of character of another person. And of course, when we're writing poems, we're always doing that, even if you're writing something that has some autobiographical cues. And so this is sort of a doubly deep look, I would say, you know, for a persona poem. And I would love it if you could talk a little bit about how useful it is as a poet to choose this form as far as not only the subject material, but also how it influences the way you think, or the way, you know, if you could say something about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in writing, so in Jumping the Pit, which is that book from Finishing Line Press, there are persona poems that are, some are kind of imagined characters or imagined characters within a type. Others are persona poems from real people. And in writing those poems, in the case of real people, it was important that I had, those came out of reading diaries and journals and having kind of a real sense of somebody else's voice to then kind of step into and work from. And in the case of the imagined characters, it's not working from someone's specific writing, but working from a whole set of information pertinent to that person. But I think in choosing to write a persona poem, it gives you a chance to kind of step into somebody else's place, or to kind of imaginatively work your way through someone else's experience, which really requires a lot of thinking. It's not something that I think you can do well unless you really have spent a lot of time thinking about what will go into that and trying to get those details right. There's a degree of real attention to detail, or real fidelity to fact that's important. But to go back to your question, I think writing persona poems, I think asks you, or gives you an opportunity to really step deeply into something in a way that you might not if you weren't taking on somebody else's voice. And it also, I think it allows you, in writing a persona poem, it also kind of allows you to think about your own assumptions about a topic. Or your own assumptions about somebody's life, and then to have to try to work through them. Is what you're assuming correct? Do you have enough information to make that assumption? How does that relate to what your own idea is? Or is it the same? Is it different? It's really interesting in finding, especially in reading diaries from the 19th century, they're often very clipped in their accounts of things. They often kind of focus on the weather or events that day. But you can kind of get a sense of somebody's personality, or kind of feel some connections to someone in terms of what's interesting to them. So in writing a persona poem, you have a chance to think about, you know, am I maybe thinking the way this person would, or do I maybe need to step back and get more information first to really present a good account?
And in your experience, for the times that you have written these persona poems in the past, and also in your approach to this current project, have you found yourself to be often surprised, you know, when you're in this process and being so attentive and so intense that you sometimes surprise yourself because you are taking on some other ways of thinking and other ways of seeing and being? Has that been the case?
Definitely. I'm finding right now with the poems that I'm writing, I had thought maybe I'd be writing persona poems about the Scherfey family, and I found that there's kind of a lack of firsthand accounts from them.
Okay.
So I haven't been doing that. I've been writing kind of close third-person poems, so not quite in their voice, but really close to their experience. And in those things even, I've just found you need so much detail to try to get things right. For instance, Mary Scherfey raised silkworms. That kind of comes up in something that I was reading about her. Yeah, which is very interesting.
Oh my God.
So I wanted to put that into a poem and just found that I needed, you know, you can read a sentence that says she raised silkworms and during the battle the worms died because they weren't fed. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a lot. And then you go to write and you realize, no, you actually need to know about 19th century silk production mm-hmm. in the United States and what mm-hmm. that looks like and what's involved in actually raising silkworms and making silk, which it turns out is a very complicated process, mm-hmm. But makes interesting material for a poem and gives you a good excuse to spend a few hours researching odd corners of history.
And so, think about the, I've got metaphors and imagery going, I mean, the process and the silkworms and also the sort of political implications
Absolutely,
for the Industrial
yeah.
Revolution and how that affects the battle.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, and how it's playing out in somebody's living room, more or less.
Yeah, a sort of intimate scale
right.
for something that is affecting a population.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. So, something I'm thinking about when you're describing the silkworms and the way that you're also a poet who likes to write about place. In the 1508 blog, when you were talking about Zepeda's poem, Where Clouds Are Formed, you have a really nice quote here, realizing that Zepeda's way of writing place is not just writing about it, but making it live in the sounds, the cadences, the rhythms of her poems. And so these, I'm so interested in the way that you're thinking of, you know, of other senses mm-hmm. and place really takes on the sounds and more. Would you like to say something more?
Definitely. Yeah, I was thinking about, I mean, in coming here, I was really excited about having access to all the research materials, but I found that just in the week I've been here that it's really important to be here in Gettysburg, living, you know, just a couple minutes away from where the Sherpies were. Just because for me, being in a place, you know, you really see, I've been writing a lot about birds, so I've been mm-hmm. noticing birds in the time that I've been here. And that's something you can't get unless you are in a place, knowing what species are there or who's out at what time or what plants are growing. And I think all of those things have, you know, almost have a prosody tied up in them, have sound tied up in them. In writing about birds, you know, writing about red-winged blackbirds calling outside the back of my house last night, that's something really specific. That's something that I could only get if I was here. And that I think I wouldn't be hearing that sound or thinking about those names or thinking about kind of the shape of the landscape without actually being here and, mm-hmm. and living with it.
There's a lot to soak up, isn't there?
Absolutely.
With
yeah.
all of your senses.
Yeah. Yeah, the smells. I had noticed when I first got here, it was very cold. Mm-hmm. And there were 2 days that were warm, and all of a sudden I was smelling all kinds of things, just smelling the kind of decaying leaves or the... just things, you know, kind of coming back to life when the temperature got up, mm-hmm. which is just, again, you just don't think of that unless you're actually here.
But these are the things that make the difference between a sort of straightforward poem and a poem that really gets at something.
Yeah. Right?
That really, because then the readers, when the reader's senses are engaged, mm-hmm. and that's not going to happen unless the writer's senses are engaged.
Right. Yeah, I think that's kind of the basis of all I'm thinking about, just about any writing activity I've done with the class, mm-hmm. Really comes back to senses and kind of engaging not only what you see, but what you hear and smell and feel. That's kind of the fodder for a good poem. Mm-hmm.
So you work as a library specialist at the University of Arizona Poetry Center. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's an amazing place. So the Poetry Center is one of the largest collections of contemporary poetry in the United States. We've been around since 1960, and we have a collection of over 50,000 books of poetry. Located in Tucson, Arizona, it's completely open to the public. Anyone can come in to use it. So I work with that collection really closely. If you visit when I'm not away at a residency like right now, you'll find me at the front desk, where I just love getting to interact with people, recommend books, help you find things, and give people access to our archival and rare materials. We have a huge selection of kind of trade poetry books that are just available for browsing, but we also have a really unique collection of artist books, kind of rare fine press
Fantastic.
Books, broadsides, all kinds of interesting things that everyone can come in and use.
This is really I mean, this is even bigger than it sounds. Like, yeah. You have something, not only the volume, but the sort of specialties, like with the broadsides and the special collections, and in addition to the trade poetry. I mean, it's really, and the fact that that it's open to the public.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about it, that anyone can come in and use it. Mm-hmm. And for me, I mean, I love having people come in to use those special materials. So for me to be away and getting to enjoy other libraries and other special materials has really been a treat.
And also, I imagine you can really hit the ground running here in Gettysburg, because as a library specialist, you really are, you have familiarity and research skills and
right.
are able to really apply that and sort of, you know, in the time that you have, you really professionally know
right.
how to jump on that and make the most of it.
Yeah, because there's so much here. So yeah, it's been great to get to do that.
I did want to, sort of before we close, bring it back to the sort of Dunkard, the saying something else about Dunkard Brethren mm-hmm. and this choice of exploring something through the, you know, the Peace Church tradition.
Right.
And
I've done a lot of reading about pacifism, mm-hmm. or about the history of Christian pacifism
mm-hmm.
in preparation for this project. And I think what I've found, gosh, I don't know, I found so many things that are interesting. Just at finding, you know, groups of people that just feel committed to living out something that they think is the right thing, but mm-hmm. also living it in a way that doesn't put judgment upon other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I found in reading about the Sherfys and in reading about other brethren in this area after the Civil War. So Mary Sherfy, who is the mother of the Sherfy family, was kind of known after the battle for being incredibly welcoming of soldiers coming back mm-hmm. Who had fought on their house. And it's important to know that the Sherfys came back after the battle to just intense devastation. Outbuildings had burned, their barn had burned, just about everything they had owned was out in the yard, trampled into the mud. There are bullet holes that are still in the house. Just total devastation of a really high monetary value. And these are people, again, that are choosing not to be part of the war. So they come back to this, and then after the fact, in the years after, Mary Sherfy becomes known for welcoming back people that have fought in the house, people that will come back and say, I was in your cellar during this battle, and she invites them in, and they go down to the cellar. She was known to have photographs on the wall that people had sent to her. I read a letter this morning of someone sending her a photograph of himself. Yeah.
Wow.
And so I just think that's so striking that I think when I'm reading about this or often I'm reading about the battle, my reaction is kind of fear or being mm-hmm. overwhelmed or not really wanting to think about the level of suffering that people experienced. So here's an example of someone that this was their home. They come back to bloodstains in the floor, and they're still able to love and welcome people back and forge this ongoing relationship with them rather than shutting them out.
And it's a choice.
It
right?
is, yeah.
Everyone is reacting in different ways to when you have this so something of this magnitude that happens.
Right.
And that is, it's a sort of lived reconciliation,
uh-huh.
right? That is, it's sort of, that's very impressive. And that's, of course, always relevant.
Right, yeah.
That we all have a choice to, we may not choose what happens to us or around us, but we do choose how we respond to it.
Right, and how we extend ourselves to other people,
yeah.
How we choose to interact with them.
Yeah. Well, I am just fascinated about this project and really looking forward to the results.
And thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to meet you and to have you here in Gettysburg as an artist in residence.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's wonderful to be here and just glad to enjoy this time and this place.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain. My guest has been poet Julie Swarstad Johnson. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.